There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hi, I'm Lawrence Dallaglio, and this episode of the Evening Standard Rugby Podcast is brought to you in partnership with QBE Business Insurance. QBE is one of the world's leading insurers, and they will help your business build resilience through risk management and insurance solutions.
Evening Standard Rugby Podcast with Lawrence Dallaglio.
Hello and welcome to the podcast. So, the Springboks make history with their fourth World Cup title and England come home with bronze medals. We'll look back at our favourite moments from the tournament and look ahead at what's next for Steve Borthwick and his men. Here to help guide us through all of that, of course, is the delightful Sarah Elgan. And from the Evening Standard, it's Steve Cording. Hello to you both.
Hello.
Hello, Lawrence.
Hello.
How are you? Fresh after the weekend?
I'm feeling fresh.
Fresh and fit.
How much sleep have you had in the last 72 hours?
It's been a very tiring World Cup for Sarah, for everyone who's been working. It's not all fun, is it, really?
But Saturday night, it was fun for Lawrence.
Well, occasionally, you have to celebrate like you won the World Cup yourself, don't you?
I have to say, I'm feeling a bit blue this today. No games to look forward to. It just feels been such a great tournament, hasn't it? And now it's finished. It just
I've got to be honest, it has been a great tournament, but it's been a long tournament. I think we're all in agreement that 9 weeks is just too long.
Nine weeks
for players is too long.
Yeah.
Wow. 9 weeks for fans, the livers, you know, they're not designed for that sort of behaviour. you can't cope with constantly being at it. Sarah, all that travelling to him, backwards and forwards.
But I'm just delighted that I have made it back, as you said, 9 weeks later. I know I've been back and forth, but I do not look like a baguette, a piece of cheese or a glass of rosé. So actually, I'm winning at life. Thank you very much.
It shows you how long the tournament was. It started in boiling heat and you were all getting soaked.
The weather was brutal, wasn't it?
And listen, France did brilliantly. I thought they hosted an amazing tournament. I'll be honest with you, as a host of a tournament in 2015 where we went out nice and early, we did continue to host the tournament. I thought the French sort of left their assignment a little bit. Once their team went out, and this is no blame on the players, but the general mood, understandably, in France went completely down. And they had no coaches or players who turned up to the World Awards dinner at the end.
I saw that.
Their fans continued to turn up at games because they couldn't offload their tickets, clearly.
And just booed
the referee, booed the teams that played.
No, I had a Kiwi mate, Sean, who went to the game, and he did say that Friday and Saturday, he said the atmosphere was pretty flat outside. He said they still managed to find quite a few Kiwis that were around, but he said generally it didn't feel like it, because he went to the first game, which obviously was against the French, and he said then it was absolutely bouncing.
Yeah, I was sitting there at one point in the final looking around, and I thought the atmosphere was pretty good in the stadium.
But
I was sitting there at one point and I was like, oh my gosh, how amazing would this atmosphere have been if it was, I don't know, say Ireland and France. Can you imagine, given the support that the Irish were over? But I enjoyed it. I thought it was an amazing experience. Yeah. I loved a bit of Mika at the top.
Yeah, do you know what? It's the first time, we're not quite at the Super Bowl status yet, but
I thought it was good.
Where they've had a band, a world-renowned performing artist, band, whatever, actually at the World Cup. So credit to World Rugby or the French for organising that.
We
had the stadium announcer in front of us, Sarah, who was on the touchline.
He was only
a tiny guy, but the energy that he created.
Wasn't exhausting.
I mean, I was watching him thinking, wow, I mean, what is he up to? I mean,
give him
credit. I mean, I thought there was a whole team behind this. This was one man on the side.
Yeah, fair play to him. You're right there. Shall I introduce our special guest then? Shall I? Naturally, it only seemed right and proper, given the weekend's result, that we welcomed former Springbok onto the pod. It's Bobby Skinstad. How are you doing, Bobby? How hard have you been celebrating since Saturday?
Well, it's been a funny one because I was doing some media. I only finished late and I was just worried about trying to play catch up because I've tried that before and then I ended up upside down by Sunday morning. So I took it easy on Saturday, but then we had the traditional South African family bride home on Sunday to celebrate with family. So that was really good.
Fantastic. fantastic. The scenes in South Africa, I mean, they look incredible as the Springboks arrive home. I mean, how did the nation receive the news? How were they celebrating, I guess?
Oh, I mean, I think I must have seen 1,000 videos. It was incredible, you know, because different people were watching in different places. They opened some of the shopping malls. They put, you know, big screens up for people who don't have pay television. I mean, it was incredible. So lots of people together celebrating. And when that happens, as you know, then you create momentum and you don't stop. You know, Lol's been on a couple of bus parades around and he knows exactly what it's like. So I think they've got that ahead of them now, but they've already had 2 days of celebrating. I saw Eben Etzebeth's hairstyle and I think maybe there were some errors in judgment being made after a few celebratory beers.
Let's hope they remember. I'm not sure Lol remembers many of his best tours.
No.
Okay, let's talk about the final then. I don't really know where to start, Bobby, to be honest, but it obviously came down to just one point. I don't think anyone would have predicted how it played out. 3 yellow cards, 1 red, a disallowed try. There was so much going on. As a South African, how did you feel watching that first as a fan?
Yeah, look, I mean, I certainly don't celebrate beating anyone because of a red card. So let's just put that out there. I didn't feel that the cards were equal. I felt sorry for Sam Kane. I think he's a gentleman of the game. I don't think Wayne Barnes had anything to do with it. That decision goes away into a bunker. We see a few people deliberating, and then the call comes back. So there were no secret South African agents in the bunker. I can't blame the players on the field. I do feel that both of them were a yellow, not both of them were a red. I think Jesse Creel changed direction so quickly that Sam Kane probably couldn't get down into a tackle pose, although he was, and Matt Dawson actually reminded me, he remained very, very high for the contact point. With Sia Khaleesi's one, he came from a long way out. He was tackling a guy at the back of the lineup, but if you watch what happened, his head hits the ball, which is in the guy's possession, and then bounces up and hits his head. So I don't think either of them were intent-driven. Take those out of the way, then the game was great. You said a disallowed try. It's not really a disallowed try because it's a knock-on before anything's happened. So, you know, 6 phases before and 6 passes before the ball's knocked on at the line. I called it because it was on our side. I said, hold on, he's knocked that on at the line. I didn't realize it was a penalty. It was knocked out of his hands, but I just saw the knock-on. So I was hoping they would go back when they did. And they always do these days. I think New Zealand had more running in them in that middle section of the game. If they'd used that, they probably would have got another try maybe, and or at least some territory enough to get more than just a long range kick. And then you look at South Africa, I've got to take my hat off. The defense was unbelievable. I mean, 4 words for me, Peter Steph de Toy.
It was
what I would have given
to
play with a guy like that. I mean, I avoided tackles for 15 years. You know, you can imagine if you have a guy like that.
That's why you look like that, Bobby. That's why you look like that and Lol looks like he looks.
Exactly. I tried to avoid him, but sadly couldn't for some reason. I mean, first of all, congratulations to Bobby and the Springboks. I mean, an amazing game. You know, we've been treated in this Rugby World Cup to some stunning rugby, also played by South Africa versus France in the quarterfinal. But I just think it was enthralling, wasn't it? Because when you looked at South Africa coming into this game, their World Cup record, they'd won 3 finals. They've got such an impressive record. But to win a quarterfinal by a point, a semi-final by a point, you know, both in the last few minutes of the game, that was obviously written in the stars, really. Before we mention any of the players, just the coaches deserve enormous credit because they had some seriously brave coaching calls throughout the whole tournament. And,
big time.
I mean, some to the outsiders, including myself, at times some baffling choices that they were making in their selection, completely against the grain of logical thinking. But clearly for them, they were logical. And, you know, I think they deserve incredible credit for the innovation. I think for the courage, the strength, I think the commitment and their vulnerability, really. And the Springboks, there was a sort of an acceptance and a sort of comfort that no one's going to like us in this tournament. And that's okay. We're happy to play the villains because everything we're doing is for the purpose of the team. And, you know, I'd like to say to Bobby, you know, of all the World Cup successes, and listen, it's now 4 finals that South Africa have won, is this probably the greatest ever achievement? Because I don't think I've known a World Cup that's so competitive. We've always gone into a tournament thinking it's South Africa, New Zealand, maybe England have got a chance, maybe one or two others. But Australia, it's the most competitive World Cup we've ever seen. South Africa had to play Scotland, Ireland, which they lost, but they practiced their 7-1 bench in that game and they kind of, you know, were preparing for later on in the tournament. I think to have beaten, you know, France, the hosts, which is probably the hardest, you know, game of any competition in the way that they did, then to beat an incredibly strong England side and then the All Blacks. I think it's the best ever World Cup victory, Bobby. Would you not agree?
Lol, I completely agree. I mean, I think it completely overshadows any of the other ones. It, you know, going back to back and away from home and being able to play out, you know, like those top six in the world, like you said, you know, play all of the other top five in a tournament, literally. I mean, World Cups, as you know, good teams go into them and good teams go out of them. You know, you don't always get as far as you want to. I mean, I've been at a World Cup far more confident than the World Cup that I won. You know, we had in 99, we had a team that should have gone a lot further than it did. We went out to an extra time drop goal from Stephen Larkham. And, you know, that's heartbreaking. But you realize that how much of these World Cups is on a knife edge. And this one was just a little bit different because those knife edges, some of them happen in the quarterfinals.
Yeah.
You know, and then the world sort of looks on and goes, oh my goodness, how can it get better? And I think maybe the one thing I have to say is that for the final, you know, whatever happened in that final was going to be big because it was such a sort of long build up to, oh my goodness, can they do it? They've sort of scraped once, they scraped through again, they scraped through, but they never looked like they were a team being well beaten by everybody. They looked like a team playing good opponents. And that's why you've got to give credit to, one, their opponents, but their ability to come out of a scrap on the right side of the result.
Bobby, just a question on the coaches in particular. I mean, Razzie Erasmus has been a controversial figure in the past, didn't win World Coach of the Year. Obviously, he's now being courted potentially by a lot of nations around the world, potentially a role for him in the England setup, which is something that's been talked about for a while as potentially coming in as the director of rugby. How difficult do you think it's going to be now for the Springboks to rebuild? Because obviously, Felix Jones is already going to England. Jacques is off to Leinster. Is that going to be a big rebuilding job for them? And also, do you think that Razzie should have won World Coach of the Year?
I didn't watch the awards. I'll be honest, I don't think that'll bother Russie too much. I think he's all about the result for the team, you know, and this is quite genuine. So Lol will know this, you know. I mean, I played against Lol and I hated him because he was a bloody good rugby player, you know, and but we've got on. He's annoyingly good at golf and all these other things, and he's fun to have a beer with. So we've slowly learned to get on with each other.
Those are potentially the three best things you could ever say to Lawrence, golf, rugby and a good drinker. That's all you need.
Well, there you go.
And it's the only reason we play, really, isn't it?
But, you know, when we played against each other, we probably didn't have the time of day for each other.
No.
And I've got no problem with that because you want to win on the field. You know, Lol was a winner. I was a winner. And Russie was a winner. I played against Russie in the same position. You know, we played in the same team, but we were provincial rivals. So I didn't want him anywhere near the number of the jersey that I wanted to wear. I did spend 1 year playing with him. I went to the Cats. He retired through injury. He got quite a bad Achilles tear, which he never fully recovered from. And he went into coaching, and he actually started sort of semi-coaching with us and then going back into the Free State side. And, you know, the change was unbelievable. It literally was scales from the eyes. I mean, there was a guy who, and he retired early, you know, at a sort of early 30s, maybe 31, 32, who'd played some amazing games for the Springboks and been a Tri-Nations winner and Currie Cup winner, etc. Turning his hand to coaching, he was already innovating in his first season. You know, Free State were doing different things in the driving lineouts. They were using backs to win their own lineouts. They had flankers running in the centres. They had counter-attack play starting behind their line. I mean, you could see the innovation setting in. So I think he's been on this amazing journey of rugby with South Africa. I think he'll really struggle to just turn that around and suddenly say, okay, right, I can do all of that for England or anyone else for that matter. I know he's got a book coming out and he alludes to a few personal struggles therein. And I think some of those are health related, etc. So I don't know how much he's going to want to commit to immediately. So I don't know if he will go straight to England or something like that. I think he would fit in like a hand in a glove at any team that was struggling to find a North Star around culture. He would fit in with any players or sort of backroom staff that were happy to work really, really hard and innovate and spend time getting their best players on the field in the right positions, because that's in his makeup, you know. He is a bit of a loyalist to South Africa. He's been around the world and liked it. And I mean, he's loved in Munster, but he sort of left them at very short notice because the South Africa role came up. And I think there were a lot of people there who were disappointed because he'd already done some good stuff for them. So I'm not sure he would just fit into an international role, but I think that might actually come from him not fitting in more than people not wanting him to go to the role.
Can we go from the coaches then to your captain, Siya Kolisi? Not only is he an incredible ambassador for South Africa, Bobby, but also obviously for the game of rugby in general. At the end of the game, so I was there broadcasting for a Welsh channel, S4C, and minutes after he lifted the trophy and he was walking past and we happened to wave to him, he came into the studio without being asked, and he stayed to answer a couple of questions. He's such an inspirational player, isn't he?
Yeah, he is. And I think the most incredible thing about him is that how he's taken this role, you know, he hasn't changed. He's the same kid who made his debut for the Springboks, you know, all those years ago. He was a youngster in a difficult World Cup. You could see he wanted to be a bigger part of it. He was given the leadership role by Erasmus, who I think actually saw more in Sia than Sia saw in himself. Mm-hmm. But, you know, sometimes you've got to be given a bit of a mantle to actually start to aspire to it. So I think he's been amazing. He's a great ambassador for our country. And over and above all of that, he's a bloody good rugby player. You know, he makes incredible contributions. And the Springboks rank themselves on these battle stats, you know, these how many extras are you doing? You know, assisted tackle, assisted carry, lifts in lineouts, work around the ruck and maul area. And he's just amazing and has been amazing for a long time.
Bobby, I mean, listen, we know that the data and the science and everything that Razzie and his coaches are doing played a big part in their success. Their selections were, you know, spot on. But do you not think that ultimately maybe the difference in South Africa at the moment is that the narrative that they're able to use, Siya Kolisi probably epitomises it, is that the pressure is a privilege. And the game is very technical, as we know. It's quite tactical. And we'll talk about New Zealand and their failing really in the final, but do you not think that South Africa more than any other team are able to push and pull those emotional levers to really squeeze out the kind of every last drop of resilience and commitment? It felt to me like a game that New Zealand wanted to win, but because of what's going on in South Africa, South Africa didn't lose.
Yeah, I mean, Lol, you've summed it up perfectly, you know, and to be honest, I've watched quite a lot of your recent stuff with kids from underprivileged backgrounds, and it's the same narrative, you know, when you've got nothing to lose, you know, and everything to lose. In the same sentence, it becomes your everything. I mean, Rassie Erasmus, I caught the end of a documentary where he said, guys, do me a favor, don't be the kind of player I was. You know, that's a big statement to say, eh? Don't be the kind of player I was, where I was given something on a plate and I did okay with it. You guys are given something here. It's not on a plate. You've had to take it, but you can do everything with it. And I think that all these players are absolute epitomes of that. I mean, one of my players of the final was Dion Faree. You know, he missed a few lineouts. The guy's 38 years old. He made his debut, you know, 18 months ago.
Yeah.
Now the guy's winning a World Cup final, playing 77 minutes. He hasn't played starting position in any team for about 6 years because he's, you know, he's seen as an impact player. Bongi Mbonambi goes down and he comes on. Then you got Kwagga Smith. His battle stats are through the roof. And I think these guys actually, they've taken on board exactly what you said, Lol. They're saying, we can't lose. Not because it's a privilege, but because we owe so many people so many things. And that's a huge burden to take on. But if you take on that kind of pressure, then the result actually looks after itself.
I mean, I just wanted to talk about New Zealand for a second because they did play their part in the final. But I was sat on the touchline at the pleasure of being in between sort of Andrew Mertens on one side and George Gregan on the other. So I sort of really understood what it must be like to make some serious decisions on the field. But Bobby, were you surprised at the way that the Kiwis played in the opening 20 minutes? Because I was. I thought it looked like it was premeditated. It was probably the hardest it had ever rained in the tournament. And we used to have a rule when we played South Africa, nothing behind the gain line. You know, nothing behind the gain line. And yet they were running 6, 7, 8 phases in their own half. And George Gregan and I were looking at each other going, what are they doing? They're utterly mad. And I think as soon as the rain stopped, I thought that they looked like the sharper side. But the problem was that they were already 9-3 down. They didn't even get into the South African 22 before they'd conceded 9 points.
Yeah, I mean, and it's a great point. I think if I had to rank the two teams out of 10 for the final, I would give South Africa a higher rank for delivering on what they wanted to deliver. I would give New Zealand probably 15 out of 10 for the way they played their quarterfinal. And that, you know, absolutely flawless rugby. I mean, they didn't drop a ball. They had 100% possession, etc. They didn't give a scrum away to Ireland. But they did to South Africa. They made a few mistakes. And I think South Africa, when they see the manifestation of what the coaches have been talking about, they say, listen, guys, if we just keep tackling them, they will drop the odd ball. And then Peter Steph comes racing out the line and hits Jordy Barrett. New Zealand were on the attack for the first time inside the 10-metre. And Jordy Barrett, not looking, he was looking for the long pass and he got hit out of the line, knock on South Africa's scrum. You know, then ball on the side, boot out, South Africa line out. And just, I promise you, I mean, Lawrence, you can attest to this. These games are won on and lost on literally one thing. You know, one long range kick. You know, New Zealand missed two kicks.
Well, they elected not to take three kicks.
Well, sorry, they had three kickable opportunities they didn't take.
Yeah.
They had a long-range kick they missed. So you could potentially say out of 12 points, they decided not to take 9 of them, you know, and then missed one of them.
And the one they missed was probably the hardest one. And he should take no blame for...
No. I'm not blaming him. I'm just saying that they... you know, Pollard had the same length kick and got it.
Yeah.
So on that final, South Africa delivered on what they wanted to deliver. And I feel tremendously sorry for New Zealand because of the journey they've been on. I love Ian Foster. He's a great guy. I mean, I've got to say, Razor Robinson coming in, he's going to be amazing. He's going to take on that culture to the next level. But New Zealand, you know, 3-4 weeks ago, what they've achieved with where they were is amazing.
A couple of quick questions before we say goodbye, Bobby. Sam Kane, heartbreak for him personally. How do you stop moments like that haunting you forever as a player?
Look, I think Sam has already made a few comments about it and, you know, he said he'll have to live with it and he's got a pretty stoic answer to all of those kind of things. He's a gentleman of the game. He's a great player. He's achieved so much with this team. For that to happen in a final was disappointing. It certainly doesn't define him as a player, as a captain, as a leader, or as an individual. I think he's a great rugby player. I think he's a great servant of the game and, you know, certainly, you know, all kudos and respect to him as a leader of the All Blacks.
And finally, Bobby, the Springboks, they're now the first men's team to win 4 World Cups. What will this mean for South African rugby and its future?
It means a lot. You know, South African rugby has been at a junction for a while now. We've headed north instead of south in our domestic rugby. And I think the URC and our inclusion in EPCR rugby and certainly, you know, Champions Cup rugby is very, very good for South Africa. And I think this win will boost that. It'll boost participation and numbers from kids in parts of South Africa that we can only dream about how hard and difficult the existence is. But now again, the locks will be taken off the rugby club and the school teachers will be out there coaching and saying one day you can grow up and be a Siya Kolisi. And if we can get more people playing in South Africa, I think we've already proved we've got quite a lot of talent. If we can get more, then more talent gets put into that funnel and more comes out the top and that benefits South African rugby. So that's what I'm hoping this World Cup does for South Africa.
Bobby, from all of us here, many, many congratulations to South Africa for an amazing World Cup win. I know you've been celebrating, but thank you for joining us, for being the only sober Springbok who's able to actually speak coherently and sensibly. Listen, you're back in the UK now, so we wish you all the very best. Thank you.
That's kind of you guys. Great to chat. Thanks very much.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hi, I'm Lawrence Dallaglio, and this episode of the Evening Standard Rugby Podcast is brought to you in partnership with QBE Business Insurance. QBE is one of the world's leading insurers, and they will help your business build resilience through risk management and insurance solutions.
Okay, well, let's turn our attention to England. But before that, Lorenzo, what is your big match moment of the week?
The big match moment with the Samsung Galaxy Tab S9 Ultra. Bring the big match to an expansive display.
Well, there's so many to choose from, isn't there, really? I could have gone for the big match moment before the match itself, which was the selection of the Springbok bench, 7-1, which was a huge risk and nearly one that cost them the game. It could have been Sam Kane, the captain of New Zealand's red card, first ever red card in a World Cup final, and clearly a big match moment. But I do feel that there was a moment in the game where New Zealand were right back in it, and they had a penalty in front of the post and they did not kick the penalty. They decided to kick for the corner and I think they lost the line out, or there was an issue with the line out, and South Africa cleared their lines. And, you know, for me, I've turned down a shot at 3 points. It cost us a grand slam in the end against Wales at Wembley. I didn't realise it at the time, but that's exactly what happened. And with all the incidents that took place, the big match moment, it would have put New Zealand into the lead for the very first time. And I think that that was a
that would have been a swing.
I think that would have broken South Africa. And I think that they would have, you know, gone on and won the game. So that's my big match moment. Their decision, can't remember exactly when it was in the second half, but George Gregan and I looked at each other and thought, that is the match.
Okay, join us now as we look at England's achievements is the Evening Standard rugby correspondent, Nick Perriwall. Hey, Nick.
Hi, guys. How are you doing?
Good. Are you at home, finally? You made it back.
Yeah, home.
What I used to do when I come back from a 9-week tour, you know, sort of just drop the towel on the floor.
no, but what he
start
has.
Start swearing at every opportunity and you're sort of eating at the table without lifting your head from the dinner bowl.
No, but what he has done, and I have to tell the boys this, Nick, I saw Nick quite a few times out there. And on the last, you know, the final, we spoke in the press room. Did your wife like her beautiful blue silk scarf that you bought her as a present?
Yes, she did.
There you go. Yeah. It was in very good taste,
Are we talking Hermes?
We're talking a very nice shop. It wasn't Hermes, but it looked like a very nice, expensive shop. But, you know, you had been away for like 8 weeks, so she deserved
it. Yes.
Better than a stick of rock, anyway, I suppose.
Good man. Welcome home, Nick. Talk to us about England. You've been following them throughout the tournament, and I mean literally following them around France. They walked away with a bronze medal, and they're probably feeling pretty pleased with themselves, all things considered. Now, they also know that they're not the third best team at the World Cup, even though they finished third. They had an easy draw, but they got progressively better. Steve Borthwick's team have finished winning 6 out of 7 games, you know, in the last however many 3 months, and they've just lost to the eventual World Cup winners by a penalty goal. So give us your assessment as England head home of their performance throughout this World Cup.
Yeah, I think reaching the semi-final, given the draw, was really a par score, wasn't it? But then performing so well against South Africa, pushing them all the way, is probably slightly better than they perhaps could have expected, even though they knew that they felt they had that kind of performance in them. But really, at the moment, the style of rugby they're playing will only work against certain teams. It was perfect for the weather. It was perfect for South Africa's approach. But I feel like if England had played that way against the likes of Ireland, France or New Zealand, it could have been difficult for them. And I think, you know, Steve Borthwick deserves a lot of credit for 10 months and devising a fairly simple approach that would work in the time constraints. He only had 9 matches in preparation. When South Africa won the World Cup in 2019 under Rassie Erasmus, they had 18 matches in preparation. And people were saying that wasn't enough time then to build a team that could win a World Cup. So for Steve Borthwick to build a team that could finish third in a World Cup in half that time, I think that deserves great credit. The big question now is how do they move that forward? And how do they actually expand the game and build an attack? Because they don't really have an attack that can carve a team open at the moment. And I think one of the big questions is, who will be the personnel who can do that? Even Jamie George said after the third place playoff, he sort of admitted for the first time, England admitting for the first time, they do have to expand their attack. And so it'll be fascinating to see what happens next.
Okay, so you've spoken about a bit of a change in the guard. They need to expand their attack. Who are some of the newer England players you think that have done enough to warrant a place in the starting lineup against Italy when the Six Nations kicks off in February, Nick?
Well, I think Ben Earl's been England's player of the tournament. And if you're thinking about the fact that in the Six Nations, he wasn't anywhere near the team, really. And Steve Borthwick told him to go away and work on several specific things. And he did that and then some. And he's come back and he's delivered in spades, really. And I think that he's going to have to start and they're going to have to find a place for him, whether that's at number 8 or flanker. And he's going to be approaching the peak of his career in the next 3 to 4 years, you'd argue. So it's time for England to make the most of that. Alex Mitchell certainly overachieved, given that he wasn't even selected in the original 33. So you'd like to see guys like Mitchell kick on as well. But yeah, there is a big nucleus of players who probably won't be playing again. And that will be a big challenge for England to move past that quickly.
Nick, as we're now at the start of a 4-year cycle towards the Rugby World Cup in Australia, is now the time to change the captain and look to the future and potentially put Ellis Genge as captain of England?
No, absolutely not. Because the cycle's completely dead. Because you can go and finish third at a World Cup with 9 matches. And New Zealand lost their first ever series at home to Ireland in July 2022. Joe Schmidt and Jason Ryan came in and they almost won the World Cup. So you don't need to build for 4 years. These test matches are really important between now and then. And what we've seen actually in one of the things that they have done, bringing back guys like Joe Marler and Dan Cole. To be honest, England would have really struggled in the scrum without those two guys. And, you know, Dan Cole's 36 and he was one of the top performers in that semi-final. And it's not just that. You know, Ben Youngs didn't play very much, but he was absolutely crucial to what Alex Mitchell was able to do on the pitch just because he was there, you know, in the week, be in his ear saying, look, this is what you need to do, this is what you don't need to do, you do need to worry about this, you don't need to worry about that. Effectively, it's an extra coach, but it's a coach for one player. And it's a player who'd never been in a World Cup before. And, you know, could have been a very difficult situation if he hadn't had somebody like that there. So I think if you started turning everything around now, I think that would be a disaster. And, look at the quality of Ireland and France in the Six Nations. Yeah, they didn't do what they could have done at the World Cup, but they will be extremely, extremely difficult sides to beat. And I think certainly Farrell's got to play 10. He's got to be captain. And I think you can expand the attack with players around him. He's the best tactical kicker. He's the best tactician England have. He has to play 10. He has to be captain.
I think Farrell gets a lot of criticism, which is unjustified, to be honest with you. Any 10 can only play well if their pack deliver. And I think up until the Springboks game, and maybe for 10 minutes against Argentina, I don't think the England pack were ever what I'd call outstanding at what they were doing. So, you know, there's no magician at 10. Steve Borthwick has got some big decisions to make, though. Nick, he's got to rebuild the England pack, particularly in the back row. Courtney Laws has retired, as you said. Ben Earl, outstanding, England's best forward, but won't go back to Saracens to play number eight, that's for sure. So, is he a six? Is he a seven? Who do they bring in at number eight? Who's going to be the second row partner? Will Itoje carry on going and playing at the levels that he's been playing at? And where are we going to find a couple more props of the quality of Cole and Marla? And, you know, I think the performance of Theo Dan was a real positive and looks like a natural successor. But I suppose there's a balance, isn't there, Nick? Just to remind England fans, just to bring us back down to earth, we've actually lost more games than we've won in the Six Nations for the last 2 years. So surely, having got England back to winning ways, having won six out of seven, you know, Steve Borthwick will want to set England an objective of winning more games than they lose in next year's Six Nations.
And I think that that's absolutely right. And I think that it's got to be about careful progress now. But I think the thing is, the game plan that was crucial for the World Cup, given the time, I don't think it will be enough. So they do have to add an extra attacking layer to that. So I think they've probably got to start doing something different with the centres as well. I think they could really do with somebody who can, you know, provide a bit of everything from 12, because that would kind of change the dynamic of the back line a great deal. And yeah, in terms of back row, Blindside will be a fascinating selection, because George Martin obviously was fantastic at second row in the semi-final, and he has a massive future. Just there's probably a small question mark at the moment as to whether he's potentially quite mobile enough to play six in the fastest of test match games. You look at somebody like Tom Pearson. I know that Northampton and he are looking at trying to add an extra line out string to his bow. And I think if he could do that, then he could potentially be somebody who would come into the equation strongly for the six shirt, because he's certainly got the engine, he's certainly got the aggression. And certainly, yeah, in the front row, there's an awful lot to work on there. It's going to be bumpy in some respects, but I think they'll be trying to smooth out as many of those rough edges and certainly a few gaps in the depth chart. And that's one of the things the RFU have been fairly concerned about. And this is something that goes back a few years now to a few changes in the guard in the RFU and a few clean outs in terms of youth coaches. And it's something that now a different regime in the RFU sort of greatly regret, losing guys like John Fletcher and Russell Earnshaw and Peter Walton, you know, who are very forward thinking coaches, and they're obviously plying their trade elsewhere. But it's something that England can't afford to do, really, which is overlook young talent coming through, because the guys who are coming through the ranks now will be the players we're expecting to rely on in 10 years' time.
Nick, it's great to talk to you. Please tell me you've got some time off now that you're back.
Yeah, 2 weeks. Yeah, absolutely.
Have you? Yeah. Nice.
Yeah.
We'll speak to you very soon. Nick, go and put your feet up.
Thanks, guys. Speak to you soon.
Take care.
Cheers, Nick.
Bye.
Cheers.
Okay, so before we bid farewell, it's the same in Welsh and English, farewell, you know.
Farewell.
Farewell.
You've got to get used to speaking English again now.
I have after now, all your you're right. Yeah, I have actually, yeah. Back to Premiership action on the weekend. Anyway, before we bid farewell to the World Cup, I'm going to ask you both to pick your favourite highlight from the tournament. Could be a game or a moment in a game, and maybe also who you think the best player was and why. So go for it. Who wants to go first?
Well, in terms of a game to watch, I have to say Portugal beating Fiji.
Oh, you've taken mine.
Oh, sorry. I was just going to say, for the wider implications for rugby, for two so-called lesser nations to actually put on a performance like that, I thought was just a fantastic match. Personal highlight, I have to say, was being in Marseille for quarterfinal weekend, which has to go down as probably the best rugby weekend that we've ever had. And the atmosphere amongst the England fans after beating Fiji in that quarterfinal, it just felt like an outpouring of relief. And I'm hoping that we'll get more of that during the Six Nations. In terms of player, I mean, Artie Surveyor for me was hands down the right choice as World Player of the Year, but I have to give special mention, I think, to England captain Owen Farrell, who finished top scorer despite missing the first two matches. He took a lot of grief during the tournament, as Lawrence has already said, but finished with 75 points, 12 conversions, 15 penalties and 2 drop goals. So for me, I'd give him as my player of the tournament.
Can't argue with much of that, Steve. Will Jordan made the top point scorers list and didn't even kick a penalty, drop goal or conversion because he finishes the top try scorer in the competition. So I think well done and special mention to him. South Africa, unsurprisingly, top defenders, something like 900 tackles they made across the whole tournament. And I think, you know, the selections of their coaches were bold and brave. But really, the quarterfinal weekend gave us a couple of games, particularly, you know, Ireland, New Zealand and South Africa, France. I can't take away from the final and the occasion it was and the way that South Africa played and the narrative and their fully deserving victory. But one game and one weekend you pick out would be that South Africa-France game. It was an incredible game, probably the best half of rugby I think we've seen in a World Cup for quite some time. I was just gutted that only one team could win because they both deserved to go through.
They did. Okay, I'm not going to choose a quarterfinal weekend. As amazing as those two matches were, Ireland and Wales got knocked out.
You didn't have a very good quarterfinal weekend.
So that was not a good quarterfinal weekend.
In the Elgin household, that's no good.
In the Elgin household, yes. So I'm definitely not going to choose that weekend. You've taken the one I was going to choose about Portugal-Fiji. I just loved the result of that game because Portugal were their first ever win in a World Cup. It was special. And Fiji getting through to the quarterfinals.
And Patrick Lejisque, by the way, who coached Portugal. Amazing winger from France, probably didn't get any credit for that. I mean, the Bayonne Express, I think they called him. An amazing, amazing performance from Portugal.
Yeah, it was incredible. So if I can't choose that because you've had it, I'm going to go for maybe Wales-Australia. Only because I felt like Wales kind of found their identity a little bit in that game. They went back to the Gats way of playing, I thought, for maybe the first time since he's come back. That's what we saw.
I found my identity.
Well, that was going to say, the second point was that Lawrence put on a Welsh jersey, probably for the first time ever, off the field of play. You probably swapped jerseys, did you, with Wales players?
I did swap him. He's got a lovely rag and bone top now, that fella from Wales.
So that would be, I'll choose that as my game. And then play, I'm going to be very patriotic. Well, actually, I'm going to choose two. I'm going to choose Johnny Sexton for going out, you know, the way he did after giving so much to that Irish jersey. A phenomenal player, brilliant person. So I'm going to mention him. I'm also going to mention Jack Morgan because I feel like a star has been born during this World Cup for
Saya
Wales.
Khaleesi mentioned him, didn't he?
He did mention him to us. And I just think, you know, we've known for a few years how great Jack is. I mean, he didn't get the chance under Wayne Pivock. I'm going to choose him because I think he is and is going to be a fantastic player for Wales, but I also think he's going to be a fantastic captain for Wales as well.
Are we going to mention the big loser of the Rugby World Cup, Mr. Eddie Jones?
No, we can't. Okay,
I mean, I have to say, he did exclusively reveal on the podcast in May, didn't he, that he was actually going to leave the job after the World Cup, which we all thought he was joking at the time, but actually it's transpired that he was serious. But Australia is a bit of a mess. I mean, Lol, you are a proud British and Irish Lion. Is that tour already looking like one that's a bit of a dead duck against Australia?
I think, as Nick has already alluded to, that, you know, maybe in cycles of World Cups and Lions tours, you think that, but actually things can change very quickly. So let's not write off Australia just yet. Someone could come in there, you know, they pick a another coach. Could be an Australian.
Ian Foster.
Could be Ian Foster. Could be,
you imagine?
Razzie Erasmus. Could be anyone these days. Nothing would surprise you in rugby union.
No.
So if they do that, then let's hope they get Australia back to winning ways.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, we better start turning our attention back to the Premiership then. Where, for anyone who doesn't know, the table is currently being topped by Bath and Saracens are in ninth place. Obviously, there's a long, long season ahead, but it's already looking to be a pretty exciting one.
Yeah, I caught most of the Bath game against Leicester at the weekend, which I have to say was pretty much of a thriller in the rain. Bath already were looking pretty good with Finn Russell directing operations, but Leicester obviously hadn't won a game and then came back and won it with the last kick of the match. So I think we can look forward to more thrills, spills and excitement, can't we, going forward?
Well, listen, we're used to the last kick of the match, winning games of rugby, whether that's in Paris or back in the UK. Let's hope that one of the lasting effects of the World Cup is that it helps to shine a real spotlight on club and European rugby in this country and across Europe. We all love watching it and certainly needs our support. Right, that's all for this week. My special thanks to Sarah and to Steve and to Nick and also our special guest, Bobby Skinster. We'll be back with you very, very soon. But for now, thanks for listening and goodbye.
The Evening Standard Rugby Podcast with Lawrence Dallaglio.
Hi,
Hi, I'm Lawrence Dallaglio, and this episode of the Evening Standard Rugby Podcast is brought to you in partnership with QBE Business Insurance. QBE is one of the world's leading insurers, and they will help your business build resilience through risk management and insurance solutions.